All right, welcome to Behind the Badge, Illinois, brought to you by the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, sponsored by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your current one, give them a call at 855-56-DAVID. Joining me today is Chief Kirk Brueggemann from O'Fallon, Fairview Heights Police Chief Steve Johnson, and Chief Lou Jogman from Highland Park. My name is AJ Bailey, Deputy Director for the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, stepping in today to host for the first time as David has a scheduling conflict. So our topic today is a pretty serious one. It's about attacks on law enforcement officers, and it's all kind of based on this recent study that came out from the FBI. They do this every year, but this new study says that attacks on law enforcement officers are on the rise. I'm going to give you kind of a quick breakdown of the study before we really get into our Q&A and our talking points, just to kind of get everybody on the same page here, not just our chiefs, but also our listeners. So according to the study, 60 law enforcement officers in the United States were feloniously killed in the line of duty last year. Now that's a decrease of one from 2022. So we're glad that there's a decrease, but it's only a decrease of one. Some of the shocking news for 2024 though, as just from January to April of this year, 24 officers were feloniously killed in the line of duty, 10 of which in April alone. So this is already, this year is shaping up to be what I would say might be worse than last year. So I just wanted to put that information out there. It's interesting to note, though, in 2023, more officers were killed in the South, but the Midwest was only like a few behind them, like 20 versus 16. That was something else interesting I noticed about the study. And we can get into that a little bit later. But just to get into all the other information there, there's been a steady rise of attacks on law enforcement. So it's not just the deaths of law enforcement officers covered in the study, but also the attacks. That is on a rise, according to this released report from the FBI. 466 officers were assaulted by firearms in 2023, which is a 10-year high. A 10-year high. That's the highest number in a decade. In comparison, for 2022, it was only 370. So it increased by almost 100. And the majority of these attacks, again, in southern United States, but to be fair, that is the biggest region that they look at, according to this study. So just kind of to break down those figures. And if you want to see those exact figures, we're going to have links to the study in our social media posts and our podcast descriptions so our listeners can follow along with some of the different topics that we discuss. There's a lot of interesting numbers here when it comes to the assaults on officers. So there was almost 11,000 agencies that were reporting when it came to attacks and line of duty deaths and things like that. And in 2023, they reported 79,000 assaults on officers. And that indicates about 13.2 assaults per 100 officers. And I was reading an article last night about how that basically equates to one officer attacked a day. And this is not great. These are not great statistics. But it was really shocking to me to really see these figures and see this dramatic rise when it came to the assaults on officers. And obviously, it's all very concerning. So I'm going to throw this easy one out there to our co-hosts. Are you surprised? What was your initial reaction when you heard these numbers? We'll start with Chief Johnson. You haven't been with us in a while. So what are you surprised by these numbers?
There's definitely no surprise when you vilify a profession for many years and you use terms like all of them are racist and all of them, all they want to do is shoot unarmed people. And the media and politicians continuously support and push that false narrative. Of course, people are going to believe those types of things. I think about this. I've been doing a survey recently, and I go into a room and I ask people, how many of you get a newspaper mailed to your house? And nobody raises their hand, or maybe three old people raise their hand, right? And so nobody gets the newspaper anymore. I said, how many of you watch the 5 o'clock news every night? And very, very few people raised their hand. So then I said, how do you get your news? Well, all of it is from social media. It's Facebook, it's TikTok, it's Snapchat, it's Instagram. And all of those mediums, when you click on one thing, you get more of that one thing and you don't see the other side. So I'll go to a community group and I'll ask them, I'll say, how many nationwide out of 800,000 police officers, nearly 12,800 police departments, how many people do you think law enforcement officers shoot every single year? And generally, the answer I get is between 40,000 and 60,000 people we shoot. Well, year after year after year, it hovers at less than 1,000, less than 1,000. And so people are thinking that we shoot a heck of a lot more people. And I say, why do you think that? Well, the news and the things that come out and stuff. And it just is not the case. Now, of course, some news media will tout, well, police officer line of duty deaths are down. So that proves that's not true. Well, they're down by one. And let me tell you why police officer deaths are down, because we wear ballistic panels. We have fantastic, amazing training that we get from the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. We have more tools in our toolbox, better tasers, better equipment, better de-escalation techniques that we use. And the medical stuff that we do nowadays is significantly better. Almost every police officer I know carries a tourniquet and a med kit, not in their car, but on them. And we are saving many more. It really is the difference in a way. My dad was in Vietnam. He was a combat Marine. My older brother was in Desert Storm, Somalia, Mogadishu, Iraq, Afghanistan, all of those things. And they had many, many soldiers injured, but many more of them lived because of the medical, abilities versus Vietnam and previous wars. But just because they didn't die doesn't mean that everything's perfect. They go out on disability. They can't use their main arm for the rest of their life. It's the mental, psychological, everything that adds to it. So I think we have many, many more wounded, but we're surviving more now. But when you vilify a profession for year after year after year, and by the way, falsely, because the stats clearly prove what they are showing and what they are saying is not true. And I don't want to monopolize this, but I'll just say this. The FBI had a stat a year or two ago that on average, out of the 800,000 police officers, we had 53.5 million contacts with citizens. Out of 53.5 million contacts with citizens, we shot less than 1,000 of them. And by the way, less than 40 of them were characterized as unarmed minorities. Now, when they say unarmed, some of those cases, if you look at them, they were in a vehicle driving towards a police officer trying to drive over them, or they had their head, the police officer's head, and they're trying to bash it into the concrete. That's considered unarmed. So when you look at that stat, if I'm not a great mathematician, but I figured out one time, or I called a buddy of mine who's a mathematician, that means if you come across a police officer on a call for service, you have less than 0.001% chance of being killed by a law enforcement officer. You have a significantly higher chance of being struck by lightning. You have a higher, unbelievably higher chance of dying when you go to a doctor's visit by medical malpractice, an unbelievably higher chance of getting into a car crash. But that isn't talked about in the national media. It's the opposite, right? So you wonder why assaults on law enforcement are up, despite better training, better officers, all those things.
Chief Jogman?
Yeah, I totally echo what Chief Johnson was saying. Listen, over the last couple of years, you can look back and we can look back. This is not surprising at all. We look back at some of the ways law enforcement was being pictured or treated or reported on. And then you started seeing how some people either took advantage of that or just started acting on that. I remember seeing a couple New York police officers that were getting water thrown at them. And they just, you know, had to walk away because they weren't looking to get, you know, into a fight or to really push the issue. Again, we're all about trying to de-escalate. And as people were, you know, critiquing and vilifying us, we really had to, unfortunately, take a step back and not try to exacerbate that. And we did that, but that comes at a cost. Now the cost is you've really put a green light on minimizing law enforcement and their authority. And if it's okay to throw water at them, and I know in Chicago here by up by us, we had, you can look at the videos, it's insanity. But, you know, you had people jumping on the hoods of squad cars, you know, as the officers are driving down the street, and just complete and blatant disrespect for the position of a police officer and for the authority of what the role is. Because of everything that's gone on in our country over the last couple of years, officers had to be very, very careful about how they would respond to something like that. And so what that's set up now is, you know, use the analogy, you've got, you know, two kids, and you've got one that comes home at 10 o'clock every day on time, like they're supposed to. And the other one comes, you know, maybe 10, 15 one time. And then if you don't do anything to that child, you don't hold them accountable, then they come home at 10:20, 10:30, 11 o'clock. Clearly, if you're not holding them accountable, they're not going to change their behavior. And then what's the other one see? Then the other one sees, well, why am I following the rules if nothing's going to happen to that person? And so you've really diminished the respect for the office, for the position, not the person, but the position. So clearly now you've got people taking that to the next level and actively assaulting police officers. You've put a kind of a target on their backs by not supporting. And I know a lot of people do, and we're grateful for the support that we do get. But there, you know, unfortunately, have been times now where they're not supported. And so now you've got people just actively attacking law enforcement. And I know there was an L.A. County deputy in West Covina, California, just sitting at a stoplight a couple of weeks ago on his motorcycle, shot in the back, just sitting there doing nothing to anybody. And he lived because of his vest, his body armor. But that's the kind of things you're starting to see. People are actively attacking officers, not in the middle of an arrest. They're not for any other reason other than their law enforcement. So now when you wear this uniform, you are absolutely a target. And we'll talk later about how does that impact our residents? Well, it does. Even if you're not a police officer, this is going to have an impact on you in society. And we can definitely talk about that later.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I was jotting down some notes just while you guys were talking about the lack of respect. And, you know, it really starts, you know, in childhood, you have to teach that respect for law enforcement officers. Do you think that is an issue with maybe some of our youth? You know, people aren't really instilling that respect in officers, or is that, you know, maybe something we need to continue to work on? And Chief Brueggemann, I'll also ask you, of course, are you surprised by these numbers about the number of attacks?
No, you know, you bring up a good point about respect, and it was something that came to my mind. And I think Chief Jogman said it, it's a lack of respect for authority. I see it in law enforcement, in policing. I see it with teachers. My wife is a teacher. There's been a shift, you know, in just that complete lack of respect for authority figures, for people that I came home years ago. I was a talker. I liked to talk a lot. I when I was in school, the worst thing that could happen for me is if I got a check mark on conduct. And if that was checkmarked on conduct on my report card, I was in huge trouble. I could get straight A's. I didn't, but I could get straight A's. And if I had a checkmark on that conduct, my parents.
Hey, Kirk, I know you believe that C's get degrees.
Yes. So,
yeah.
I would be done. That checkmark on conduct was the one thing that I was afraid of more than anything in the world. We're not seeing that anymore. You're not seeing that with students. You're not seeing that with our youth. That lack of respect for law enforcement, for authority. And I mean, that's a really big, huge topic to kind of gravitate to. But I do believe that is part of the core issues The police, for years we've been asked to come in and solve problems that have taken years and years to manifest themselves, like we have some magic pill, and we don't. Those things are best dealt with, like one of our partners with ILACP is, invest in kids. The cops invest in kids, trying to get kids education, trying to get kids started early, get them on a path to making good choices, because if they don't, then they're going to come back and they're going to be our customers later in life. Steve brought up a great point too about the number of contacts that we have. And all these contacts are positive, but I meet with people regularly and they do believe. I have had people tell me, and it is 100%, it is their perception, therefore it is somewhat their reality, that they worry that when their young son or daughter, their young minority son gets is involved in a traffic stop, they are legitimately worried that they may not come home, which is just not reality for us. It's not something that happens. So it's trying to educate people about, what really happens on these traffic stops. What's going on? I admit, police have done some bad things in the past, but the vast majority of things, we have a lot of great contacts, and it's that social media. It's where people are getting their news. They're not getting accurate news all of the time on both sides. So it's a tough topic.
Can I add to, I do definitely want to just follow up on that piece about our youth and why we wonder why they may not have that respect. So, I mean, you can look back 3, 4 years now, and when all the things that were going on in our country with respect to law enforcement and maybe the lack of trust based on some of the incidents that happened, well, you started seeing again the vilification, but in a roundabout way, more subtly. I know specific cartoon shows that were geared towards police were removed, and you weren't, they weren't shows anymore. And I won't name the names, but then there were also toys and costumes and a lot of the different things. It was as if, law enforcement is bad. It really was. It's bad. They've done bad things, and so we don't want to promote that as a profession to our kids or to anybody. So we're getting rid of the TV shows, the cartoons, and what an effect that has on law enforcement when you see a show that maybe your kids watch or other people that painted police, at least exposed police at a different level, the job they do, and it's removed. And that's now taboo and it's not a good thing. Well, of course, if you're a youngster, you're not exposed to it, or worse, you were and it's gone. And now the message you're receiving is law enforcement's bad. Well, how do we expect them to have respect or an understanding of the work we do, or the reality, as these gentlemen have said, the real number? They're not gonna. So, I mean, Halloween last couple of years, there was a study I saw, but a lot of, I was a police officer when I was a kid. I always wanted to be, so I wore my costume. You didn't see them out there. And so you have parents who, for whatever reason, whether they believe what they're hearing or maybe they just don't want to have any blowback, they kind of fold into the shadows, and nobody wants to advertise that they, support the police. But it has a huge, huge chilling effect on law enforcement. Every profession has people that break the trust, every profession. And law enforcement just seems to be that one that if an officer or one person does it, it is applied industry-wide at every case. And it might be because a lot of the work we do, I hate to say it, is we view it as important, but it's negative. If we're writing a citation, we're costing people money. We're doing it for safety. If we're arresting mom or dad for a domestic, well, we're doing it for safety and for the right reason. But a lot of our work is negative. And so I think people, it's easier to be angry or upset with law enforcement. Although people know they need us in the back of their minds, they know when they get that ticket, they're not happy with us. You can look at all the other professions and, whether it's firefighter, doctor, different professions that generally help people. So if one does something wrong, it's easier to give them a bit of a pass. But for us, it seems to be, it's widely, widely applied to our officers.
I want to add to what Chief Liu said, and he literally nailed it in so many ways. I remember reading this. I teach law enforcement classes like most chiefs do, and I was talking about the vilification of law enforcement, and then you always say, well, of course, there's a few bad apples, but we weed them out. And someone raised their hand in the audience and they said, yeah, but a bad apple as a police officer is very similar to a bad pilot. Like, it's catastrophic compared to so many other professions when you have a bad cop. And that resonated very heavy with me. And they're absolutely right that there are bad apples in every profession. But I can tell you this, every cop that I know, worldwide, nationwide, the worst thing in their career that they want to deal with is a bad cop. And what I mean by that is we do everything in our power to weed them out, charge them, fire them, get rid of them, make sure they're never, ever law enforcement officers again. On my resume today, I have police officers listed on there that I charged with felonies. Two of them were police chiefs and several of them went to prison. And I am proud of the fact that we will not allow a bad apple to stay in law enforcement. It is absolutely huge that we make those that very well known to everybody that not only do we police our own, but we have checks and balances to make sure that we are doing things the right way. And I think about this, Chief Liu was also talking about, you know, Halloween costumes and police shows out there. First of all, the only police shows that are on every single night, they show the police officers doing illegal and immoral things. And that's not police work. That stuff, we don't shoot someone every hour minus commercials. We're not out there planning drugs. We have checks, body cameras, in-car cameras. We have leaders that are on scene and it just is not factual, but people start believing it. So for many years, I've taught law enforcement classes at a community college. And the last probably 10 years, they're live online classes. And because I'm a chief, I don't have a ton of time. So I would teach 2 to 3 classes a semester and they would be online. Well, now only 1 out of 3 of the law enforcement classes are barely making. In other words, not enough people getting out of high school want to go into law enforcement. It's that vilification of it. And I had an old boss who used to say this all the time. Everybody loves a firefighter. And he said, why? And it's because they don't write tickets. And it's a good point, but it's even more hardcore nowadays than it was before. And I think about what Chief Kirk said, and he's absolutely true. You know, it was about a year ago, I was in a school zone. We had a bunch of complaints about speeders. I was there with a couple officers, and a minivan drives by and it's speeding. I pull it over. And when I walk up on the passenger side to talk to the minority driver, before I even got up to her, she is bawling and she's got 2 of her kids in the back. And what she told me, I finally got her to calm down. What she told me is that she knew that me as a white police officer, I was going to kill her. And I could get offended by that, or I could understand where she gets her news and what the beliefs are from some parts of society about law enforcement. So through lengthy discussions, I was able to calm her down. In the trunk of my car, I keep frisbees and footballs for kiddos with Fairview Heights police on it. And with her consent, I gave that to the kids. And then I actually talked to her many, many times, talked her into coming to our Citizens Police Academy to see what law enforcement was truly about, not just on TV, not just on the iPad, but what is the real law enforcement? At first, she couldn't go. She couldn't afford to be there. She couldn't pay for daycare. So I said, bring your kids in. I'll have someone there watch your kids. I'll waive the fee for you guys to be there. And she ended up going through there. Now, over the last several years, literally every month she brings up food for the officers. She sends us cars. She has seen a different side of law enforcement, what we're really like. And I think the change point was in our Citizens Academy, you have to do a ride along with police officers. And she told me afterwards that she really believed police officers, when they're driving around, all they are doing is looking to write people tickets. And at the end, they have to do a presentation on what they thought of the ride along. And she said she found out that in that 8-hour ride along, her and the officer passed 11,000 violations of the law. And the police officer only pulled over a few of them that were truly safety violations. And he helped them. more often than not, he was changing a tire, or someone who had a flat tire, or giving people gas money, or trying to get people help. And that experience changed her. And we need more of that in a big way.
That is truly incredible, that story that you have. I thank you so much for sharing that. That was, it kind of left me very speechless. I don't know if you saw me. I had my hand over my mouth. I was just like, that's wow. But it's so great that she went through that Citizens Police Academy and learned so much. And that's why these Citizens Police Academies are so important for departments to continue to do. And Chief Jogman, I got to bring up the 10 shared principles as well. It's something that we are continuing to push and promote about how we can help the understanding for the public as well as officers. You brought up so many great points, all three of you guys did, that I have all these notes that I just have to talk about. So I apologize for that. But we talked about, of course, the lack of respect. And I feel like I see a lot more of that with the teens and the young adults. But I don't see as much of that with the younger generation. Now, whether that's because, you know, my son is growing up with me working for the Association of Chiefs of Police. And so he always wants to be like Chief Lou and is always talking about Chief Lou and Mr. Kenny and everything. That could be, maybe I'm a little have an opinion for that direction. But he wants to be a police officer and president and all kinds of things. But I think we have a real opportunity with this younger generation. You know, maybe the teens, the young adults, they grew up seeing those most recent incidents with the George Floyd and so on and so forth. But the younger generation, the kindergarten through, fourth grade, we have a real opportunity here. And I think all these police departments do a really good job interacting with these schools, interacting with these kids. And I think we can change this, but it could also be, a generational thing with a general lack of respect for authority, like what was discussed earlier. And you guys brought up a good point about the different TV shows that are out there where you're not seeing the good cop TV shows. Since joining the ILACP, I've gotten really mama bear about my chiefs and the officers and everything. And I remember coming to work one day, I had just watched a new show and it had like a dirty cop, of course, in the show. And I'm like, what? I came in the office. I was just like, what is wrong with the world? Why do they keep doing this? And then I started to look back at all my other shows that I've seen. And I'm like, I swear, it's almost every single show, there's one on there. And I'm like, it's not that prevalent. It really isn't. And you had those stats there about, there are a few bad apples, but it's not that common. But it is the focus of so much. And, maybe it's not just media that's the problem, but it's Hollywood in general. And maybe we're just easy targets, unfortunately. But I'd like to see that change, of course. And I did bring up the 10 shared principles. So, Lou, did you want to briefly touch on that?
Yeah, I mean, so this clearly our goal and always has been, always is to have a mutual respect with our communities. I mean, we can't do this alone. And certainly if officers feel vilified, they retreat and they're concerned about their safety. And as attacks go up, because we're talking about attacks today, they're going to be concerned too about, each call they go to, maybe they're going to be a little more apprehensive. And so I'll definitely touch on the 10 shared and I'll bring it around, but to get there, I want to say how this affects, how this report and how these attacks on law enforcement affect our public. The concern is a couple things. Number one, who's going to want to be a police officer? As I know Chief Johnson said, we've talked about before on these podcasts, our recruitment numbers are really, really terrible. And so, if you're vilifying your profession, certainly not making it appealing to go into. If it's becoming more dangerous, and I add the dangerous component. So first of all, being a police officer, not great. People aren't supportive, or, the messaging is it's not a noble profession. Well, now it's also now a dangerous or more dangerous profession. Who's going to put in for that job? And we're seeing not a lot of people. And the concern I have is, and we all share, is the people that ultimately do put in maybe aren't the right people. And all that's going to do is reinforce some of these stereotypes or really create some more of these stereotypes that some of these folks are getting into this business that shouldn't be and are going to do things they shouldn't do. And it's going to be this vicious cycle. Or how it also can affect our public, if officers are seeing officers being shot over and over and over and stabbed, of course, as a human being, you're going to be a little more apprehensive on each and every call. Is that going to lead to some dangerous situations with somebody, a person who might not be really have bad intent? but now the officers are all very on edge. So it's really creating this atmosphere of concern. And so bringing it back to the 10 shared, that is why we need the 10 shared principles and really need to embrace them. We need the 10 shared support mutual respect. They support a mutual understanding, like the police academies, that we have a public that tries to understand our work. That's number eight. And, certainly value life, respect for others, de-escalation. They're all in there as well. Recruitment of, qualified people. Those 10 shared really do guide our kind of both of us, the public and our law enforcement partners. And if we can really focus on them and work on them together, I do hope that that'll help us through this, but it's going to take a lot. I mean, it really is. Again, we need a narrative and a media and our public to step up and really let these officers know that they're supported so that we can recruit and retain other officers and this violence goes down. If people felt, if I attack a police officer, it's going to mean something to me, meaning I'm going to go to jail, I'm going to be held accountable, the public does not support that, then we'll send the message that that's off limits. You're not supposed to do that. And the concern number three for our public is if they're going to attack law enforcement, if they have no fear of police, I'm here to tell you, they're going to have no fear of you either, of the public. And if they're going to attack an officer who's armed, trained, has the authority to arrest, authority to take a life if it's threatened, if they're not afraid of us or have some sort of rational respect or, understanding, and there are no ramifications, then I worry about what that's going to lead to out in society if we're the ones that are really holding the line and they're not, they have no concern for us. It's concerning for all of us.
Just to add to what Lou said, I promise it'll be quick and I'll be quiet. There was a recent Gallup poll the last couple of years where they checked on the top, I think it was like 27 professions, and it was a nationwide Gallup poll of what they thought about respect for a profession or trustworthiness in a profession. Out of those 27, law enforcement nationwide on this poll ranked, it was either six or seven, as I remember, number six or seven. Now that sounds really bad, but let's talk about it. Number one was like small business. Number two was military. Number three was nursing, right? Now, so we're like six or seven. I think we were seven. When you go down to the end, number 20, I think five was Congress. Number 26, if I remember right, was the news media. And number 27 was
I pulled it
politics.
up, Steve. I pulled it up,
Yes.
so I can tell you.
Okay.
I can tell you.
Yeah, I'm doing it from memory, so I'm missing
No,
some of that.
you're and it changes a little bit every year, but nurses were number one, medical doctors number two, pharmacists number three, teachers number four, police officers number five,
There you go.
clergy number six, so we're over clergy, judges, accountants, then you've got bankers, real estate, lawyers, journalists, business executive, car salespeople. Sorry, car salespeople, I just bought a car. We appreciate you. Members of Congress are at the low end, and then telemarketers are the absolute lowest of all. But honestly, to your point, Steve, yeah, number five, even with everything, even this is after, this is 2023, so this is after 2020, all the issues we've had, that's encouraging for us. But we, reading it here and then hearing it about on TV and the media and public, that's where we need to see it translate.
Chief Brueggemann, I'm going to bring this back around to you, and a little bit more back to the attacks on law enforcement officers. Do you have a personal story you'd like to share about something that maybe happened with yourself or a member of your team or a friend who's in the profession where you may or they have been on the receiving end of an attack? You'd like to share a story about that?
Yeah, so it probably the worst thing about being a chief, you call yourself like a mama bear with some of the officers and the chiefs and stuff like that. When you become a chief, it takes on a totally different perspective of what you're responsible for and what you're looking out for. When you're an officer, you looked out for yourself, you looked out for your partners, your crewmates and stuff like that. When you're a chief, it's your department. I mean, those are your kids. And the worst thing that can ha ever happen, and it's never happened to me, and I pray to God that it will never happen, that I lose an officer. But we did have a scary thing, and Chief Johnson, it involved both of our departments. We're neighboring departments. We share a common border, and last year on Memorial Day, We had a felony stop. Some of our officers initiated a felony stop with a couple of Fairview Heights officers. Didn't know it at the time, but it turns out that this guy had been had some serious mental health issues. And you may add into this, Steve, if I get some of this wrong, but he had some serious mental health issues, and a few days prior had actually shot somebody on a bridge from his car over in St. Louis, and had just fired from his car into another car and shot someone. We didn't know that at this time as well. But upon making contact with his vehicle, he got out of his vehicle and decided to run. And as he's running, turns around and fires rounds off at our officers and Fairview Heights officers. Now, fortunately, nobody was hit. He ran off into another thing, and then ultimately he committed suicide on the parking lot of a gas station nearby. But while, none of our officers were injured, they were still attacked. They still have that mental scar of this guy. Literally, he tried to kill us. I mean, this is, and I pull up to the scene from this, and I'm talking to my officers, and they're fine, but it's just a wave of emotion knowing that this person thought so little of someone else's life, thought so little of his own life prior to taking his own life. He decided it would be acceptable to turn a gun and fire at my officers and Chief Johnson's officers. So, it's a tough situation to be in. I'm very fortunate it didn't happen, but then, as chiefs, we have to look out. Those, while they didn't have any physical scars, there's mental and emotional scars from being involved in that. One of the officers that we had was only on about a year. The other one had a couple kids at home, and he was kind of in his he's older. So, it's like, do I need to be doing this anymore? Is this really worth it? Fortunately, they're still with us. We were able to provide them with some peer support services and get them to see some counselors and different things like that. But those are the type of things that you, as chiefs, we have to always be cognizant and be wary of, to make sure that our officers not only survive them physically, but then survive them mentally, because those are the things that people don't see, because we've had too many people going out on mental disabilities when they're attacked, and they don't want to do the job anymore. They can't do the job anymore. A lot of PTSD, stuff like that. So.
I know there was something that happened recently within the past year here in Springfield, where a trooper was attacked, and my friend happened to be driving through that area like the next day and ended up getting pulled over by an officer. And the officer came up to her car, and she said his hands were almost kind of shaking. He was still shook up from what had happened the day before. So it not only impacts, of course, the officers involved, but everyone in the department and all of the officers, because if one person in this profession is hit, it really impacts all of us. That is very true. Chief Johnson, did you have a similar story or a different story that you wanted to share?
Chief Kirk talked about that incident, and my officers returned fire against this guy, and it was heavy traffic. They had to wait till they had a clear shot because he was running and zigzagging. They missed. But it is, when you watch the body camera, the in-car video, the surveillance videos, it is unbelievably true to say the only reason he didn't run into the gas station and commit a mass killing is because the officers were doing their job. They forced him to change direction and go a different way. And what is very, very telling afterwards, looking at our squad cars with bullet holes through the windshields into the driver's seat where the officer was sitting. And, at the time that the person fired shots at law enforcement, they had at least two different police service rifles pointed at them. And you'd think, no way in a million years would anybody do that. But they do that, right? And that's the thing that's incredibly tough in law enforcement dealing with. When I first started in law enforcement, I mean, it was way, way early on. I had a friend of mine on the department who was working a detail where they would we would ride undercover on the buses in East St. Louis. And his name was Deputy Sheriff Elmer Harris. And you would check for fares and you would try to prevent violence and people who are doing things they wouldn't supposed to be doing, they would get off of that mass transportation or they would arrest. And one individual, it was as simple as he didn't have a ticket. That's all it was. And they asked him to step off the bus and they were going to have a discussion. To be honest, they probably weren't even going to write him a ticket. And the guy pulled out a gun and he shot Elmer and killed this deputy sheriff. And he's an African American officer working in East St. Louis, grew up in East St. Louis, a very high crime area, protecting his community, serving. And that's the reward that he gets for protecting people in every step of the way. You know, yesterday was National Memorial Peace Officers Memorial Day. And every year that's a proclamation from a president a long time ago. And we posted something on social media and I really thought about this morning. When you look at this little black band, what this means that goes around the badge of law enforcement officers. And in the state of Illinois, through the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, anytime any law enforcement officer is killed in the line of duty in Illinois, every police officer wears this mourning band until their funeral. And I posted this yesterday and it said this: for those of you who have never had to wear this piece of fabric, this by far is the heaviest piece of fabric on the planet. The weight is literally staggering. It can be so heavy that it takes your breath away. Heavier than a uniform, much heavier than a vest. And each time we wear it, it gets heavier and heavier. And it's so absolutely true.
Well said, Steve. Well said.
I think we just need a moment of silence for that. And then, Chief Jobman, I guess I'll go to you and ask if you've got a personal story to share.
Well, my personal story is a family story. My father, which I've shared a couple of times, he's right there over my shoulder. But, and I think my dad's story drives home a point that we haven't addressed really yet. But, my dad was a police officer in 1977 in Tinley Park, Illinois, and ultimately responded to an armed robbery where he exchanged himself for a hostage, was handcuffed, and then, ultimately shot in the head with his own gun because he exchanged himself. Now he lived. I mean, again, this is what we talk about. Even in 1977, the medical care saved his life. He should never have lived, but his life was completely different, as were ours as a family. And I think that's what we miss a lot. I think people in general, because you see TV, you see somebody get shot in the shoulder, and they keep carry on and they go fight people. And I mean, it's absolutely insanity what they do in Hollywood. It really minimizes and trivializes the fact that real bodies, real injuries are lasting. And even again, if we're not focusing on that number of officers killed, you have to really look at the number of officers injured permanently, whether it's mentally, physically, emotionally. But these injuries, people shot in a wrist, you see it on the news, officer shot in the wrist, he's going to survive. Everybody moves on. Oh, great. Well, that officer's not moving on. I mean, they could have a catastrophic wound that precludes them from being a police officer anymore. Maybe they lose the use of their hand or their arm. It certainly impacts their lives. So there, and take it down the next level, things that are happening every single day that you don't hear about. Stitches for officers, black eyes, busted lips, broken wrists, broken fingers. Those things are going on everywhere across the country because people are fighting and resisting. And you're never going to hear about those. But those are just as important, as the fatalities because it has that same impact on law enforcement. Certainly, you lose somebody that is a profound, profound loss. But when you start thinking about the injuries and the attacks that on the psyche of an officer, those are still things that live with you and are cumulative. And when you hear about all your friends and numbers of people that are getting injured, I mean, it's a lot. And I think people just don't understand that part of it at all. And I don't blame them for some, to some extent. You know, I lose an officer, somebody that twists a knee after chasing somebody, they're out for 6 months, you know, and maybe they come back and maybe they don't. But just twisting a knee because they chase somebody and now they have to have surgery. And that's going on all day, every day, all across the country. And those officers, you know, we need to remember them as well. And it has a profound impact on our communities and on our organization. And so my dad's story, you know, points that out. He didn't die. I was so blessed. Our family was blessed. We had him, but clearly shot in the head. I mean, he had a lot of impact. His life was impacted physically, emotionally, mentally. He couldn't be a police officer anymore. And so those are the kind of things that are going out on. And I think people maybe just kind of write those off as like, oh, they lived. That's good. Well, how good is it? And it's an important piece for people to know that that's going on way, way, way more than the fatalities for law enforcement. And as we heard, the shootings themselves are just astronomical, or the attacks are astronomical, and they leave marks, scars, and injuries. So it's something to consider for our folks that are out there watching.
And just to go over some of those figures again, for anybody who might have forgotten from the beginning or just joined us kind of halfway through, 79,091 assaults on police officers last year. That is a 10-year high. And doing the math and everything, that's 13.2 assaults per 100 officers. Those are just astronomical numbers. It's a 10-year high, especially when you look. Break that down closer to the assaults by firearms, which is 466 last year, the year before 370. Again, that's just an astronomical number. And we talk about these assaults and everything that happens to these police officers mentally, physically, and things like that. But to also deal with the fact that a lot of these officers who are being shot at, attacked, injured, nearly killed, they immediately have to transition into caregiving roles most of the time and providing life-saving efforts. And sometimes even to those people who have injured them, who attacked them themselves. And that, I can't, for the life of me, I can't think of any other profession that kind of has that expectation and has to deal with that same sort of situation. Chief Brueggemann, I'm going to throw this back to you. Any other profession that you can think of that has ever had to deal with anything along these lines?
No, they're rock stars. I mean, hands down, heroes, rock stars. I mean, you know, we talk about all this stuff all day that we're this whole podcast has been about people attacking officers, but yet every single day, my officers, Steve's officers, Lou's officers, officers all throughout the country are showing up to work every single day and doing it and helping those same people that are out there that want to hurt them. Okay. And they're responding to those calls because it's amazing, because that's what they are. I mean, we're the helpers. Mr. Rogers said it, I think. He says, you know, when things are going bad, look for the helpers. Well, we're the helpers, you know, we're the ones that when things go bad, we're going to be there, and we're going to continue to be there every single day, every hour of every day, because we're rock stars, we're helpers, we're heroes. And I think that's the biggest testament to who police are, is that even when there's hatred spewing towards us, and it's not always like that. There's a lot of people that love us, and it's pretty special. Especially this week, we get a lot of treats and stuff like that. But yeah, there are some people out there that do not like us. And but you know what? We police for everybody. We help everybody, and that's what we do. And I am so proud to be a police officer and to be a police chief and to have the men and women working for our organization and policing all over the country. It's the greatest, greatest profession in the world.
AJ, and I'll follow up on that, because I mean, your question's a great question. I mean, how you worded that, there is no other profession that when somebody tries to take your life, shoots at you, actively tries to murder you, you then go and tend to their wounds and try to save their life. There is no other profession, not in the military. There is no other profession, and I would challenge any human being to, you know, put themselves in a position where somebody comes into their home or tries to hurt them on the street, tries to kill them, kill their family, kill them, and then to turn around and to, you know, put a tourniquet on them to try to save their lives, to flip that switch, and to have that internal strength and commitment to another human being, even after that human being try to take your life. And yet there are officers out there, and you watch these body cam videos, they do what they need to do to stay alive and to protect others. And if that means shooting somebody, they do it. And then they immediately switch into life-saving, even for that person who just killed people or tried to kill somebody. I mean, that is remarkable, honorable. I just, it's something that I think is lost. I think people have the expectation now that that's just, but you put yourself in that position where you almost got shot. Maybe you did get shot or injured, and now you're trying to save that person's life who just tried to murder you. I mean, it is just remarkable. And there is no purer, I think, purer person than somebody that can be able to do that, somebody that shows that kind of care and compassion. And I think it highlights what police really are. We don't care. You know, we treat all with equality. We really should. If there are those that don't, then they don't need to be police officers, and we get rid of them. But we treat everybody, even people who break the law and try to murder us, we still try to save their lives. And I think that is just so honorable and impressive, and very moving.
It's true. Officers just have so much strength physically, emotionally, and just so much strength of character, because that's what it takes to be able to do this. And I apologize, Chief Johnson. I did not mean to cut you off. Go on.
No, good. The you know, tying all together what they said, the case we were talking about that Chief Kirk and my department had, where the person shot at us, we returned fire, and then he shot himself in an extremely busy gas station on a Sunday at noon with hundreds of people there. And when the officers get up to him, they secure the firearm, they handcuff him, and then they immediately give him first aid. Immediately. And it's on all the body cameras, on all the security cameras, because that is what professionals do. And it is just, you're just in awe of these men and women that work the nights, the weekends, miss the holidays with their family. They miss the little league games with their babies, to be out there to protect people who some of them don't even support us, but it doesn't matter. That is the oath that we took. You treat everybody with dignity and respect, even those who don't deserve it. And name any other profession in the world that would be. And I want to preface this. I grew up in a military family, United States Marines. My daughter went rogue and joined the Air Force. Dinner table with my dad is very interesting sometimes. I woke up with a metal trash can being banged with a baseball bat. Get up, you maggot, that type of thing. And it is what it is. And then my daughter joins the Air Force, where they stay in 3-star hotels, but that's okay. It all worked out. And I think about that incident that Kirk's officers and my officers were involved in. One of my officers we had hired after he had been a United States Marine for nearly 20 years. He was in Iraq, Afghanistan, a whole bunch of other places in the sand you can't even say the name of. And he had been blown up. He had been shot at numerous times. But this incident affected him more than any of the others because it was personal. It was one-on-one. You could see the adversary. You could see the whites of his eyes as he shot at him and returned fire. And that affects you in a different way than an enemy that it's at a greater distance away, right? And how they do it every day, there's one simple answer: heroes. Now, every cop I know, they get mad when I call them a hero. I'm not a hero. I'm just doing my job. Nope, you're doing a job that many people won't do and can't do. You're a hero.
I 100% agree. I know you weren't there for this one, but we did do a recent podcast, and I titled it Humble Heroes, where we talked to a Chatham officer who had some true heroics as well. And I think every single one of you that I've met, every law enforcement officer, every chief, is a hero in my book. And you all are so incredibly humble, except for maybe Kirk, but that's just a different story.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
He gets a check mark for behavior today, though, for sure.
Yeah, that's
For sure.
But no, you guys are heroes. And I have to say, as someone who has not been a police officer, always wanted to be, but I didn't quite get the chance to do it. But I think if
There's
I
still
was
time.
any of these similar.
We're hiring, AJ. We're hiring up here.
Unfortunately, I've passed the age limits. I'm not
All
going to get into how old exactly I am, but there's
right.
a limit, and I know, and unfortunately, I've passed that one.
Is it
But
25? Is that what it is? 25?
it must be
Oh,
25.
bless your heart. Thank you. But I will say this, that as not being an officer, if I was in these similar situations to the situations that your officers are in, where you've been attacked, someone has tried to kill me, or and then they've turned around and needed my help, I don't know. I mean, I would think that I would go out and I would immediately help this person, but the other thought in me is I would be scared. I would be terrified that this person would continue to want to hurt me and I wouldn't be able to protect myself. And I would love to think that I would be able to just put it all aside and be able to help this person. But so the strength, when I talk about the strength of character that y'all have, it I mean it. I really do. And you guys are heroes in every way, shape, and form. Yes, we have a few bad apples, but that just forget about those because everything that you guys do is just heroic in my book. And I wanted to also take the chance. I found this morning actually. A Chatham officer posted something yesterday on Peace Officers Memorial Day about some of his experience and what it's like to be a small town cop. And he wrote about experience he had with someone who tried to kill him. And so I'm just going to read like a little excerpt of it. And this is something we haven't touched on, and we won't get too much into this, but I'm going to read this just real quick. He says, police officers really do witness the battle between good and evil playing out right in front of them. I once had a wanted fugitive tell me after I arrested him that my faith saved my life and that he had planned to kill me rather than going back to prison. But he said, God froze my heart and he physically could not pick up his gun and shoot me with it. He told me, your faith in God saved your life. Honestly, he was in just as much awe telling all of this to me as I was hearing it from him, and he broke down afterward. It was an incredibly emotional moment for me, too. He told me I was the first person he met that he couldn't kill. And the entire story, of course, he says, is much longer, and it still gives him chills just thinking about it now, even years later. I read that this morning, and it just seemed very poignant to share just that little excerpt. We'll have the full post and the full story from Officer Leach up on the ILACP website and probably in a future command article as well, because it's a very touching story about what it's like to be a small town cop, because it is different from small town to big city. But I think his story, it was really poignant to me. Any initial reactions from anyone here?
I
Chief.
just, yeah, I would just say real quick, because I know we're running up against the clock. I would just say, I think those are the things that keep officers going too. I mean, clearly, I think you said it, AJ, officers are scared. You'd be foolish not to be scared, to run up on somebody with a gun. So you are scared. Certainly, you're a fool not to be sometimes. But I hope most officers have experiences like that where you've had those profound moments and you can remember them. This one is just, really, really touching. But it could have certainly gone the other way, and a lot of them do. But it's heartening for us as officers to hear those stories, because then that does instill in us a little bit of faith, in people. There are people out there that are making poor decisions, bad decisions, evil decisions, but there are people out there that can maybe turn, and with the right help get put back on the path, and that's what we live for to do.
I remember an incident. I really hadn't thought about it for quite some time, but it got brought up here recently. And I was working a homicide with the Major Case Squad of Greater St. Louis, and we got diverted to an area pretty close to where I'm at now, because a deputy sheriff had been serving a order of protection notice. So someone was going through a divorce. They were allegedly harassing their wife. So they were being served with a protection order. And when the deputy got there, the bad guy was at his business, and he immediately fired a shotgun out the door towards the officer. And the officer hit the deck, called for assistance, was not injured other than a finger, with how he landed on his finger. And so SWAT got there. the guy continually came out of the business and fired the shotgun up into the air. The SWAT team had multiple opportunities, and that's the wrong word, but instances where they could have shot and killed him. But they noticed when he had fired the shotgun, he was firing it straight up in the air. And then at one point, the guy lit himself on fire as he walked out front of the house or the business. So, as protectors first of preservation of life being our first goal, the SWAT team closed in. They put the fire out, and the guy survived. He was charged with multiple felonies. And I remember when he got out of the hospital and he went to jail, he wrote one of the most unbelievable letters to the editor, to the newspaper, that again, no one gets the newspaper anymore, but it was in the newspaper. And what he did was he said this: "I thank God every day for the rest of my life for the protectors. I had never even had a jaywalking ticket in my entire life. This horrible situation happened where I was in turmoil and crisis, and I was a person I was not normally. They should have killed me. I wanted them to kill me, but the protectors did it a different way. And I am dedicating the rest of my life to helping first responders." And he has lived up to that ever since then. And this was about 15 years ago. And I think about, for me, that's the why. That's the why we do it.
Chief Brueggemann, any final thoughts?
No, that was a good final thought. I liked it.
Okay, can't top that one, I guess. So I think this is a good moment to kind of wrap it up. We're kind of hitting the time, as Chief Jogman was saying. Thank you, everyone who's listening and watching to Behind the Badge Illinois, brought to you by the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. And I don't want to get this wrong, sponsored by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your current home, give them a call at 855-56-DAVID. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today.
Take care, everyone.
Be safe.